No one's cashing in their fourth week, by the looks of things. Okay, so let me begin. The House is back this week. Obviously, amongst other things, we'll be debating the first reading of the Corrections Contract Management and Prison Amendments Bill, Judith Collins Bill. On Wednesday, there'll be a two-hour debate on the Budget Policy Statement. I want to discuss two main issues this afternoon. The first is the Royal Commission into Auckland, and the second is Cabinet's approach to Section 92A. So starting with the Royal Commission, as you know, the report from the Royal Commission into Auckland's governance is due with the government by the 31st of March. I've been advised by the Minister of Local Government, by his officials, that the Royal Commission will in fact be reporting back and delivering the report to the government on Wednesday the 25th of March, so this Wednesday. We are going to have initial briefings from the officials on Wednesday and Thursday, after which the Minister of Local Government will issue a statement setting out the timetable for both the release of the report and the government's response to it. But it is my expectations that the Royal Commission's report will be released within a few days. Because the government simply doesn't know what's in the report, we've had no briefing or advanced notice at all, it's premature for me to speculate how quickly we can get together a high-level response to the report. So in short, we'll be keeping it for a few days. It's our expectation the report will then be released. We'll give you a timetable of when we'll be able to make some comments about it. In relation to Section 92A, Cabinet has decided that Section 92A is not going to come into force as originally written. We've now asked the Minister of Commerce to start work on a replacement section. I guess in terms of the wider issue, Cabinet would acknowledge following things. Firstly, there is a need for legislation in this area. Some progress was made between copyright holders and the ISPs, but not enough to agree a code of conduct. And in our view, there was a number of issues which just made it difficult to complete that code of conduct without fixing the fundamental flaws in Section 92A. So the Minister of Commerce will start that work ASAP. That's really it, maybe. I'll just take some questions.
Is this as a result of the industry not coming up to code?
Well, you will have seen that Telstra made it clear that they weren't supporting the moves and they had stepped away. I think the ISPs actually had to be unanimous in their view. But because there were these fundamental flaws in the legislation, we just couldn't agree, for instance, on safe harbour provisions and the likes. In the end, the view the Cabinet's taken is that the law wasn't workable. There needs to be law in this area, so the Minister's going to go back and start at base one. Well, Cabinet, I haven't seen any paperwork on that, but I saw some comments today from the Minister of Labour indicating it would be 1 April 2010. That's the likely start date.
What are your response to concerns that some employees may come under pressure to cash up that leave, especially obviously as times are a bit tougher?
I just don't accept that argument. You've got to remember that this can only be driven by employees, not employers. So only an employee can actually ask to cash up the fourth week. An employer can't ask an employee to do that. Obviously, the employer has to agree because, as I said yesterday, it's possible you get a situation where some employees would want it, but employers can't offer it because it doesn't work for that workplace. I don't think you'll see a situation like that. What I think you have got is an example which, quite frankly, you actually see with the gallery as well, where there's an enormous amount of accumulated leave, where people don't always want to use their leave, and some people would probably rather take the cash, and this is about flexibility.
Could you see a situation, though, where you say a business loses someone on, say, 40k, and the new person comes along and they say, oh, good job, 40k, by the way, your fourth week, the debt increase, your fourth week, take it away, there's a big line outside when you come in?
That would be against the law, and they would face prosecution if they did that.
So there'll be safeguards specifically written under the law, it won't just sort of be...
There will be.
Well,
that would be my expectation. I mean, I haven't seen the Cabinet paper, but this is consistent with what we campaigned on.
So you're going to make it illegal then for an employer to approach a bunch of employees to say, hey, this is coming to effect, let's talk about it. Will that be illegal, that approach from the employer?
The process has to be driven by the employees. So, I mean, I'm sure there's always debates, and I'm sure there'll be widespread media debate on this issue when it comes about.
Except
trust employers on this stuff?
I do. I mean, look, at the end of the day, there's no great advantage for employers. I mean, at the end of the day, they're still paying for the fourth week. It's really a choice about, some people will say, look, I'd rather have 3 weeks in the cash because I'm paying off the mortgage or I've got other liabilities I want to fix up. Others will say, look, it's far more important for me to take the extra week.
See, a lot of people were talking about this to you during the campaign.
It wasn't a huge area of debate, I don't think, in the election campaign, but it was our policy. We campaigned on it for quite some time. When the fourth week came into force, we had that as a policy. It's been consistent.
What do you say to those unions that said over the years that vulnerable and low-skilled workers basically get railroaded and they might get some cash up front in the first year, but second and third they don't see any money that effectively goes into their contract?
Well, that's always the argument that, you know, in a sense, you know, you pay for these things. It's a tax on employees. Look, I mean, whatever that debate's sort of come and gone. The reality now is that they're 4 weeks provision, and New Zealanders are entitled to take 4 weeks if they want to take 4 weeks holiday. When the law changes after 1 April 2010, they should take 4 weeks holiday.
Your critics say you're simply reverting to type, but National is treating employers better than they are workers.
Well, don't see how it really helps employers. I mean, at the end of the day, they're paying for the fourth week. I mean, whether you turn up to work or not, yeah, it's your choice, but it's just your choice of how you use the cash.
But they're paying for the fourth week, but they're getting a week's work out of it rather than paying someone not to be there.
Oh, yeah, but the employee will only do it if they want to do it, and if they do it, they'll be doing it because they want the cash.
So it's not quite clear why you're actually doing it. If the unions seem to be a bit wary about it.
Yeah.
And you're saying, actually, this is just for the employee, not the employer. Why bother buying a fight with them over it?
Well, I don't think we are buying an enormous fight. I mean, at the end of the day, this is about choice. And employees buying a fight with somebody out there anyway, but not... Jeez, I just heard the news and they're off. Okay, but yeah, look, the reality is we believe in choice. We think some people will want to take 3 weeks and take the cash. Others will want to, you know, have 4 weeks.
We've seen today a National putting up fixed rate mortgage rates, given you comments in the past about the passing on, especially with the OCR drops and that sort of thing. What's your
response? Yeah, well, I mean, look, as I said last week at the Council of Trade Unions, New Zealand can see quite demonstrable evidence that there's a general rule those OCR reductions are being passed through to the rates that both businesses and homeowners are paying. Now, you've got to remember that banks don't raise money off the OCR rate. As a general rule, they raise money in the international markets, and that may be a reflection of what's happening to swap spreads. I haven't looked at it, but...
Rates should be going up, though. I know it's not directly tied to the
I just haven't had a look at it, but it might be a function of the fact that the markets are saying to go in another direction because they believe that the easing cycle's over.
Have any of them actually started raising money on the international markets?
Well, my understanding is one or two of them in the process of going through... this is the banks, in using the wholesale deposit scheme to raise money offshore. I'm not aware if they've successfully completed that round of fundraising, but I know the intention of a number of the banks is to do that.
Can I ask you about the student loan scheme?
Yep.
Essentially a bonus for repayments. Is it a little unfair on people who can't afford to pay any more over and above their compulsory?
Yeah. Well, I don't think so, because the rules of 0% loans are being maintained. So we're just simply saying, if you're in a position to repay more than the mandatory minimum requirement, you will get 10% extra written off on those additional payments. Now, it's a bit of a win-win. I think it's good for someone who has a student loan to repay early, because it gets the monkey off their back, and it's good for the government because it gets the time value of money. And we're in fact being more generous than we campaigned. We're allowing people that live offshore to make these payments. We're also allowing people to make small payments to be aggregated until they reach the minimum, which is $500, before they can get the 10% extra.
It's a better off your window, a big window, because if I get a good high-paying job after my student loan, I'm in a position to make those contributions over and above standard level, yet if I'm on a more modest income, I might not be able to afford.
You could make the argument, though, that the better off actually have a lower student loan to start with, because they're in a financially better position to undertake their studies without a student loan. I mean, I don't think the world's perfect here, but we've simply got one objective, and that is that we want New Zealanders that have a student loan to be able to repay their loan as fast as possible. And the reason to give that incentive is to encourage them to do so, and that is because in life they'll have a lot of other things that they want to do, buy a house, have a family, whatever it might be, and the sooner their student loan's paid off, I think the better they'll be, the better position they'll be in to go and progress other things in their lives.
How much money has the government set aside to cover the incentive bonus payments?
I don't know the answer. I haven't looked at it. I'd need to go and get that number for you. I don't have it on top of my head. I don't think it is. I might have it with me, but I haven't looked at it since I did last year. But I'll need to go and check for you. I can't remember. I cabinet paper was a wee while ago.
The longer term rates are going up.
Do
you think that's the signal from the banks that they think the economy is going to recover next year, say, and therefore looking ahead? They believe the OCR is going to go in the other direction.
Yeah, it can be. Look, it often is a function of the fact of where they raise money, because they raise in the international markets. Now, there's a lot of different factors that drive up those swap spreads, and I don't know what's driving it today. I haven't had a look at it.
Just coming back to the swapping fourth week of lead.
Yeah.
What sort of check or balance? I mean, is there a check or balance that you could have there where you would know that the employee has willingly done, i.e. if there is pressure from the employer, we've just got a he said, she said situation where the employee comes out and says, they tried to pressure me. The employer says, no, we didn't, they offered it. I mean, how are you ever going to know that the employer might have tried to break the law?
Well, any relationship between an employer and an employee has an element of good faith about it. And that's true for any of the conditions in the workplace. You can always make the claim that an employer is pressuring an employee. Now, in the end, if the employee doesn't want to be cashed out and wants to have the 4 weeks holiday, then they'll do that, because the law states they have the right to do that. I mean, they'll simply say, I'm taking 4 weeks. They can't be dismissed for that.
Well, how do you see it working? Would there be provision for a worker to decide each year whether or not they're cashed up their fourth week?
We haven't considered that, but I would have thought so. I can't see any particular reason why they would be stuck with having to stay with that provision. It'd be year, they'll take it 1 year at a time, I imagine.
And will it only be the fourth week that they can cash up?
Yes, only the fourth week.
They couldn't cash up too?
No.
So, Richard, have you had to give the tax cards to charity position? Have you met many people the last few days that are lining up to give to charity?
I think some people will. I mean, as I said in the speech, I mean, I personally think New Zealand's a generous country. We give about the same as Australia, the United Kingdom and Canada. But, building a long-term culture of giving is a good idea. And, I mean, the main point of that speech was really to say that New Zealand, a lot of New Zealanders don't understand that the tax rebate that was passed some years ago, that was driven off the policy announcements that we made as an opposition party, are now in place. And you're actually able to get a pretty substantial rebate. But, another element of considering that giving is if you have a bit more money to give. There's been, the Herald ran a pretty interesting story a few weeks ago, as I pointed out in the speech, that actually said, even though times are really tough at the moment, people are tending to give a bit more because they are actually seeing, quite demonstrable evidence of people that are struggling. Now, you saw that, I think, with the Victorian bushfires. We, government kicked in $500,000. New Zealanders put in $1.5 million pretty quickly.
GDP figures out on Friday.
Yep. Negative. I don't know. I haven't really been advised, but I find it very difficult to believe it wouldn't be another negative quarter.
Can I just ask whether or not the government's given any consideration to giving some money to the AMI stadium rebuild now that the needing looks like it's going to get some more money?
We've had some preliminary discussions with VBase effectively and with the local council. I had a sort of brief discussion with the mayor when I was in Christchurch on Thursday night. It's very early days and a bit preliminary, but it is a possibility that there would be a contribution.
And would it be sort of on the same level as the
need? Similar sort of number is a possibility.
Just regarding the Copyright Act, will you be repealing Section 92A?
It's effectively an amendment of Section 92A, but 92A as it's currently written won't come into force.
Yeah, I just mean, at the time being, surely if it's a law passed by Parliament and you don't want it to come into force, you should be repealing.
Well, the technical description I was given was it's an amendment, but it's not coming into force as it's currently written.
Okay, and will there be any wider looks at that section of the Act, because I'm thinking of Section 93, which regards stuff that's hosted on websites and is actually, that seems to me slightly harsher than the American equivalent. Is that something you feel?
My understanding is that the minister is going to seek some very technical advice from one or two experts, and there's been one or two names have been presented that they could go and have some discussions with. Now, it may be that they look at those other, you know, related sections, if you like, but at this point, Cabinet only considered section 92A.
Just on renewable energy, have you received a letter from Central North Island Iwi regarding discussions on geothermal energy?
I personally can't recall getting a letter in regard to that, but it's quite possible my office has received correspondence on it, but I haven't seen it.
Would you be open to having discussions with them to see if they can get some leverage into shares within the power companies for geothermal energy?
Do you mean shares into an SOE? Mm. Well, at this stage, that's not an option. Look, I haven't seen the paper on that, Cabinet paper yet, but I think it's coming to Cabinet fairly soon. So I can't tell you exactly, but it'll be this year that the funds will be contestable through New Zealand On Air.
The opposition party is saying this will lead to a lower quality and quantity of local programming. What do you think?
Well, there's been a number of reviews of the charter, and the results of those reviews were it made no discernible difference to the programming on television in New Zealand. So in my view, it's not going to make a lot of difference. Secondly, don't forget that the charter money, $15 million, will go to New Zealand On Air. It'll obviously be contestable amongst the other media outlets, not just Television New Zealand, but clearly TV3, Prime, Sky. But it's my expectation Television New Zealand will probably win a vast bulk of the charter money anyway.
Would that money be tagged to charter-type
programs? Exactly, yep.
Can I just ask you... You made some comments yesterday about people holidaying in New Zealand.
Yep.
And I was like, are you going holiday in New Zealand? Yeah,
well, I do holiday in New Zealand when I can. I don't take a lot of holidays at the moment, but when I can, I do. I mean, I go to Hawaii once a year. I have in the last 2 years anyway. I quite frankly do that because it's a bit of an opportunity to spend some quality time with the kids in Brainerd. But, you know, I've got a small holiday I'm planning this year, and it's in New Zealand.
You're not thinking of cashing up a week's
holiday? I'm hoping I don't get cashed up. Anyway, yeah, no, not at this point, no.
Are you able to comment further about the case of the autistic girl who was held in police cells?
Yeah, look, I can really only make these comments about Emma Stenson. The first is that I understand she appeared before the Nelson District Court this afternoon. Amongst a number of things, she was remanded on bail till the 6th of April and was remanded to live at Hill Morton Hospital. It's quite clear that Emma needs specialist care, and in my opinion, she shouldn't be in the police cell. She needs specialist help.
So what are you able to do anything to
take that down? She is. Basically, what effectively happened this afternoon was she was remanded by the... Excuse me 2 seconds. She was remanded by the Nelson Court this afternoon and with a number of conditions on her bail. They included, firstly, to live at Hill Morton Hospital, Christchurch, to abide by the rules of the hospital, and bail not to take effect until suitable arrangements for transportation to Christchurch has been organised and approved by the police.
So where is she in the meantime?
Well, she must be in Nelson somewhere, but obviously there, but not in the police cell. Look, it's very complex, and it's one of those sort of intersections between mental health and the safety of the community and the individual. My understanding was it was quite a long deposition. It was 45 minutes, which is a lot longer than normal deposition on a weekend day. I don't know if they erred in so much that I think the police would have genuinely been trying to protect both herself and the community. But look, it's quite clear that she's a young lady that needs some help, and the right place for her is to get that help in a hospital facility and not in a police cell.
Looking at the cycleway, previously...
Another stunning story on the front page of the New Zealand Herald today too, Patrick.
You know, you sort of previously put forward the concept of a paved cycleway.
Yep.
Is that still the plan, a paved cycleway that... New Zealand, or?
Well, the officials are working up a number of different options for me, and I'll have a bit more information on that hopefully at the latter part of the week, and at this stage it's just It's better for me not to comment at this point until we get a bit more information.
Because just looking at a 4 kilometre stretch of cycleway in Auckland,
it's very expensive.
$375,000 a kilometre. Yep. Is that
That's
something
right.
you realise when you sort of
Yeah. Well, it depends. You see, I mean, I suspect there'll be bits of it that'll be paved and bits of it that won't, and that's because you know of a variety of different reasons. So you have to wait until you see a bit more.
The 50 million estimate is that you know you mentioned before it was back then, but I'd be sort
yeah.
of aware now that's probably unrealistic.
It depends on how you do it and what you do.
So what's the urgency on this idea?
It's a good one. I mean, the urgency is only in so much as any of the things that came out of the job summit. You know, there's quite a number of initiatives. We're looking at them. We're working our way through them. I happen to think the cycleway idea presents some interesting employment opportunities and some interesting long-term opportunities for tourism. But, you know, we're working our way through it.
If it ends up estimates costing a hell of a lot more than you initially thought, are you amenable to dumping it, or are you, does this come hell or high water?
Well, it's not come hell or high water. Any idea has to stack up on a value for money basis for the taxpayer, and has to be a good idea. But all I can tell you is that if you have some flexibility of mind, it's amazing what you can achieve. Thanks very much.